Welcome to another episode of the biggest podcast by One Bone. We interview, we chat with members of the One Bone fam who are just doing it. And this one's a special one because it is the first person that we have had on the show who we have collaborated with. This is Al Bourboulakis, co-founder of Heartbeat Hot Sauce from Thunder Bay, Ontario. The sauce, if you've tried our biggest hot sauce, it is in collaboration with Al and the Heartbeat Hot Sauce fam. And they've been doing it. They've got an amazing story to tell. And Al has a really cool background and story as to like how you are starting this hot sauce global takeover. Yeah. And I would love to pull it back a little bit and sort of like go through the story of how this all happened. Like, what were you doing just before, let's say? And again, like, how did this path create itself?
Yeah, so this is back 2015. My partner Nancy and I, Nancy's a restaurant owner in Thunder Bay.
Okay.
And I was one of the sous chefs at the restaurant. We'd known each other for a few years working at a previous restaurant. So we'd been at this spot for a couple of years. And one night we randomly, after a few drinks, I think after service, started talking about Caesars and our love of spicy Caesars.
Yeah.
And then that led to there's not a good enough hot sauce for Caesars, like Tabasco, like not to knock them, but it's there's better hot sauce out there for a Caesar.
Right.
So we thought like, oh, let's try and make something. Let's make something for us, for our wicked spicy Caesars that we want to have that's better than what we can go out and
yeah.
buy. And we had the kitchen there. We're in a restaurant.
I think you start experimenting.
Like, hey, let's just go try something out.
Yeah.
So we started playing around, and right around that same time, there was a local pepper farmer in the community that was supplying like bell peppers and jalapenos and things like that to the restaurants.
Did they have backdoor? Yeah,
exactly. He was growing hotter stuff, and nobody was really buying it. So this is like fall time. He comes around for his like weekly delivery one day.
What year is this? Where are we?
This would be 2015.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, 2015. So he comes around on one of his weekly deliveries, and he's like, he'd heard that we were starting to play with hot sauce, and he's like, hey, I got all these really hot peppers that I can't get rid of. He's like, do you want them?
Right.
He's like, I'll just give them to you. And we thought like, okay, like let's do it. Like we can't say no to this.
Of course.
This is too good. But we also didn't realize what like a couple hundred pounds of peppers looks like and how much space that takes up. And like at that point we weren't doing this. So the restaurant wasn't part of it. It
right.
was just us at home, you know? So we took all these peppers.
What does a couple of hundred pounds of peppers look like?
A truckload. Like, the back of a pickup truck full of baskets of peppers.
Oh my
God. We're not talking like piling out of the box.
Yeah.
But it was the back of a pickup truck full of peppers.
Yeah.
And there was dozens of varieties, like all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
So
did he like labeled and stuff? And like,
yeah, we knew what everything was. It was all legit, like well grown, like good quality stuff.
Yeah.
So we thought, hey, this is a cool opportunity to experiment a little bit.
Crazy.
So we start playing with some of the peppers, trying out a few recipes, and we realized quickly like these peppers aren't going to last very long. So our options were make way bigger batches of something that we didn't even know if we liked yet, or prolong, you know, the use of the peppers. So that's what led to us starting to ferment, is we had to teach ourselves to ferment the peppers, to preserve them.
Right.
So we could keep testing them and using them. Again, this is all just for fun. Like we have no ambitions of doing this beyond just for fun here and there.
Of course.
For ourselves. So we're doing this so we can preserve these awesome peppers that we got. And, you know, that's ended up
for the love of the game.
Yeah. Well, the fermented component has ended up becoming a big part of our products, and it happened naturally because of a need to sustain these peppers for use. So we keep playing around. We ended up making a recipe with red habaneros, and deciding that was the one. That's the one we really liked.
Why?
Just the fruitiness of the pepper, the flavor of the pepper. We had decided early on that the hot sauce we were both looking for was a very pepper forward flavor.
Okay.
We'd been eating some like West Indian style sauces recently that were given to us, and we really appreciated how like pepper forward they were, and like good amount of heat, like you know it's hot, but the flavor is more than the heat.
Yeah.
So you keep wanting to eat more of it. So we did this one sauce with the red habanero, really liked it, and said like, I think this is going to be the one. And what's funny is that recipe we created is still to this day the recipe for our original red habanero that we released as Heartbeat. So there was about a year where we were just doing it every few months at the restaurant. We'd cook a batch and we'd jar it up and give it to friends and people at the restaurant, customers and stuff, like regular customers. And then people started asking if they could have another one. Like, well, can I buy a couple? And then it was like getting close to Christmas time. People were like, hey, I want to buy like 10 of these for stocking stuffers. So we started thinking like, maybe we have like a farmer's market hustle here. Like go to the farmer's market on Saturday, sell a few jars of sauce. And then somewhere, which is still kind of lost on me, somewhere in that next few months, there this false buzz created that there was a new hot sauce startup in town. And I think what happened is people knew that we were attached to the restaurant. The restaurant has a very good reputation in the city.
So they were thinking like basically like it's the restaurant's hot sauce.
It's like, you know, when Joe Beef launched the hot sauce, of course. It's like, oh, the restaurant's doing a hot sauce.
Yeah.
When really it's not at all what it was. It was false. But there was this kind of buzz going around, and we started getting some of the local stores reaching out saying, hey, like
we hear you have
a hot sauce coming. We'd like to buy it. We'd like to sell it.
Yeah.
So now we're thinking like, okay, there might be a little something going on here. So we kind of skipped right over the farmer's market step and just said like, let's make a product. Like there was a demand for something that didn't really exist yet.
Yeah.
So we said like, let's just lean into it and go with it and see what happens. So we met with a branding agency to discuss like, Nancy had come up with the name.
Yeah.
And then she actually surprised me. It was, I believe it was a birthday present with this meeting with this branding agency to turn this little idea we had into something tangible.
And
we're going to create a logo with this name and then a brand, and we'll come up with a label and pick a bottle. And so that kind of started that process. We developed the look and the identity of the brand, and then picked our packaging, picked our bottle, our cap, all in an effort to kind of stand out on the shelf. And so within a few months that sort of came together, and we started doing small production runs out of the restaurant kitchen. We'd go in on Sundays when it was closed and spend like 12 or 14 hours to make like 200 bottles of sauce, everything by hand, you know, peeling the garlic, the whole deal, filling it by hand with smaller bottles, bigger bottles, you know? So we would do that. And then we did that until we realized like, we can't sustain this anymore one day a week out of the restaurant kitchen. So would have been that was like 2017, early 2017, we went to market. Then about a year later, we started looking for our first commercial space, and we took on this little 2,000 square foot. It used to be a tourism office, like downtown
on one side of the
city. No business.
Oh, so you had to build out the kitchen and stuff.
Yeah, we had to create, run all the plumbing, do everything. So like we created a kitchen and then a small sort of production area and then a couple of offices up front, which at the time we thought maybe one day we'll need an office, but whatever, we'll figure that out later. That's still, there's three of us doing everything, you know?
Yeah, the kitchen is the office right now.
Everything is one. So we moved into there and we signed a 3-year lease, which we thought we were really scared to take on that much space for 3 years, not knowing what if this doesn't go anywhere.
At that time, it was not full time. You guys were still...
No, we were all still working full time in the restaurant. This was like, at that point, I think I had taken one day a week away from the restaurant to focus on just helping that place get built and set
right,
up.
Right, right.
And then be there full time one day a week so I could still have a weekend. And then basically use half of the weekend to start what would be the couple days of hot sauce work and maintain some degree of balance, you know. Didn't last very long.
No,
but,
of course.
So we just, you know, jumped in at that stage anyways. And then inside of a year, I had transitioned to just full-time hot sauce.
Wow.
We hired our first full-time employee in addition to myself.
Okay.
And then we had another guy working with us that was from the early days, you know, member of the restaurant team that came in and worked with us on the Sundays. And then he's still with us today. He's our longest employee.
Cool.
Literally day one before it was day one.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
And then things just started to grow. Like we had, you know, some opportunities come up. We got involved with Heatnest, and we got on season 6 of Hot Ones.
Yeah, I remember seeing it on the show.
Yeah.
What, remind me which celebrities were like eating it at that time. Like what were the notable ones?
6 was, I'm going to mix some of them up here, but I think Michael Cera was season 6.
Okay.
Jeff Goldblum was season 6. Oh.
Did any of them like comment?
There was a bunch. Season 6 was stacked. There was a lot of big names on that one. They're escaping me now, but it was like I feel like it was one of the bigger seasons they've had even today. Like they got some really big celebs to come out for that one. So we got tons of good interaction.
Was there a specific comment that stood out? Like, holy shit, this guy or this girl just said.
There was two that I remember. One was Michael Cera, and he actually picked the bottle up and was like reading it. And then he's like, oh, they're from Thunder Bay. No way. And like called out Thunder Bay.
Yeah.
And really, really talked about the brand and the product, you know?
Cool.
And then another one was Jeff Goldblum. because he picked the bottle up.
Yes.
You know, like, he got all crazy with it. He picked the bottle up. He started flying it around like a little airplane. And that ended up getting a ton of media coverage. So that made, that was in, I think it was the Toronto Star or Sun, one of the newspapers and like CBC and like
right.
a bunch of Canadian publications picked up that this big celebrity was on Hot Ones, like playing around with our hot sauce bottles. So yeah, it that season definitely kind of,
they're just like, they're these moments of validation, right? Or like, you know, these little moments of like, what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It was like watching, watching all these people that we know, you know because we've seen them our whole lives or whatever, interacting with something you created. It's a weird, and I mean, it's happened lots in the past few years. So like sometimes I have to remind myself that it's very cool because it's become a little bit more, we're a little more accustomed to it, which is a good thing. But those early days where you first see somebody like of influence interacting with your product and your brand, it is. It's kind of surreal and wild. Like Johnny Knoxville was on that season.
Oh,
as well.
And crazy!
The teaser for the season reveal was a clip of him interacting with it as like a lead into the season, and we were just like, "Whoa!" Like Johnny Knoxville,
huge fans of Jackass.
Yeah, exactly. So. It's kind of a weird, surreal thing for a while. And then, you know, like I said, fortunately, it's something that we've managed to maintain a pretty high engagement of celebrities and you know, influencers and stuff, handling our product, talking about our product. A lot of it's organic, like it'll fall into their hands.
Same. It's always these weird, like, you know, like Jazzy Jeff wearing One Bone, you know? And it's like, it's like the most organic thing that could have happened. Like his producer, Dan, is like just... he orders One Bone and I was like, oh, yo, like bring some to Jeff. You know? Like,
absolutely.
Now he's fallen in love with it. It's like, it's just, it's crazy. Everywhere. Yeah. It's like, especially to, like you said, to have this brand that like can hit all these touch points of like nostalgia for you, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Where, it's people that you've, like I said, you know them.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know them. Yeah. But you feel like you know them.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
You've seen them. You've heard them talk. You've seen them do their thing for so long. And then all of a sudden, they become a little more real to you because they're handling something that is yours, essentially talking about it or enjoying it, or even if they're shit talking it, like, you know, through some of the UFC stuff we've done with Dustin through his two fights with Connor, like their first or their second fight, the first of which we were involved with. They were all buddy. There was some incredible interaction, you know, up on stage at the press conference, the two of them embracing, holding the bottle, like that got like widespread mass media coverage in all the sports networks because these two enemies were embracing on stage and he's holding the bottle of our sauce up. And we were like, what's going on?
Yeah, like
what's
what is life
what's
right
happening
now?
Right now? And then flash forward, you know, a year, they rematch and they're bitter, bitter enemies. And McGregor's grabbing the sauce and throwing it on the stage and pouring it out and throwing it in the crowd. Meanwhile, we're just like, yes, this is amazing content you're creating for us right now. Like, thank you for trying to shit on our brand.
Yeah, of course.
And now a lot of that footage has just made it into a big Netflix documentary, which is out. We're watching it about McGregor.
Okay. Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
So we're watching this documentary the other day, and there's all this behind-the-scenes footage, close-ups of the hot sauce on the floor, on the stage at the weigh-ins, because he's just trying to trash it, you know?
It's so crazy.
So
man.
Good or bad, you see these interactions happening with these people, and the whole world is watching.
Yeah.
And you're just like, how do we get caught up in the mix of this?
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's sick.
Your guys' stuff is great, though, because, like, you know, I see all the content you push out, and you can tell how organic these people are in terms of like how they came about your product. Like I know I'm sure you send stuff to people sometimes,
but
so much of the content that's out there is guys up on stage playing music or doing whatever they're doing, athletes. Like I can tell you guys get tagged in stuff or people spot stuff and you share it and they're out there in the wild.
Listen,
you know?
It's so cool. I mean, like one that stands out just in terms of that is like, you know, we saw somebody sent us a DM. Like, you know, it has happened like on America's Got Talent, like, oh, look,
yeah.
Somebody.
Yeah.
But
someone
even like
captures it and sends it to you.
Or like somebody sent us randomly a picture of Dak Prescott of the Dallas Cowboys wearing One Bone. And we have never had any interaction with him. So we're like, don't even know how it happened. We're like, oh, maybe one of the linemen in the locker room, they got him a shirt or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we looked up later. We didn't even know. I mean, like, and then we see his name in orders, you know?
Really?
We're like, oh, crazy.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's super organic. And again, it's just like, it's cool. It's validating. You know, does it do anything like major pop for the business? From the organic side of things, like when you have something like that widespread, like Connor and Dustin, like fighting over the bottle or whatever.
Yeah.
Of course, that should have like a bit of a spike for us.
It's a bit of a spectacle.
Yeah. Know? Like, yeah. But for us, all these moments, they're just like validation. They're just cool. Oh, like, yeah. Oh, this guy is rocking and
yeah.
You know, messing with the brand. So yeah, well, it's
like people of influence.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like, it's weird when you think about it. It's like this individual that I don't know,
yeah.
But I look up to in one way or another, likes something.
Exactly.
I will like it too.
Yeah, yeah.
So like you said, it's validating. It's
exactly.
The people that aren't sure, they trust in the opinions and the decisions of the people that they, you know, absorb their content.
Exactly.
So validating for them. And now they're a customer.
Yeah.
You know? So it's amazing.
From the business side of things, you know, obviously a lot of entrepreneurs are rocking One Bone.
Yeah.
What's the greatest moment that happened in business that like, that was like when you knew like, oh, this is going to turn into something. I think we feel the same way. We had a lot of conversation before the mics were on, but like, we still don't even feel like, you know, we've made it or it's no. What, you know, even close to what it could be.
Yeah.
But is there like a moment that stands out to you business-wise that like, oh, this is like really turning into something?
Yeah. I mean, there was one, which, you know, I think I mentioned yeah. earlier that really kind of hit me, and it was the first NASCAR race that we ran. So we, I remember we were in New York for a hot sauce expo in Brooklyn, and we'd been at the expo all day. It was hot. We were exhausted. Went back to the hotel, laid back on the bed, and Nancy was having a shower, and I was just browsing through emails, and I saw an email come up from, I saw NASCAR. I was like, interesting. I was like, I'm really into racing.
Yeah.
We'd been sponsoring some like grassroots racers
yeah.
and getting into racing a little bit on a much smaller level. So kind of piqued my curiosity. So I opened the email and I read through it. And I mean, we get emails all the time. Like, oh, I have an opportunity for you.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Like, okay. This one seemed a little different, very much trying to sell us a sponsorship, but they seem to understand a little bit more where we're at and what our possibilities would sort of be at that time.
Yeah.
So read it to Nancy. I was like, hey, this sounds kind of interesting. Let's explore this. So we do, and for several months, you know, we work, negotiate, we figure it out, we make a deal.
Yeah.
We're like, all right, we're going to go run a primary race as a sponsor in NASCAR, which is, this is crazy, you know?
Insane.
And I knew it was a big thing for a small brand like us to do, and it was really exciting, and it felt great. But like we said before, when you're steering the ship, everything's just kind of passing yeah. you by. You're not taking it in. You're not realizing.
It's a blur.
Yeah, you're not realizing yeah. what all's really going on and what that looks like from an outsider's perspective. So I was in that tunnel vision until we get to the racetrack, and the first day I see the car pull out onto the track for a qualifying lap, and I'm looking at these grandstands at Talladega Super Speedway. There's like a couple hundred thousand people that they weren't full because it was qualifying,
but
I'm looking at this massive place.
Venue.
Like it's iconic, and I see the car pull out, and it just kind of hits me. I was like, This is big. Like we're doing something big.
Big, yeah.
But then simultaneously, I'm realizing like, I guess we've become more than I think of us as being, which is still just like, we're just chugging along trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
But it's happening around us. And that was that kind of moment where I stopped and took it in and it hit me and I just started crying.
Yeah.
Literally. I was like, this is so overwhelming. Like the scale of it all and that realizing that like we've done something that has gotten so much bigger than I ever thought it would be. And I almost missed it while it was happening until I stopped and like took it in
really
from that perspective.
Took it in.
And now that's something I really try and do more regularly with all these things we do. That's why we're so present with all these things we get involved with UFC, with NASCAR, with all of our motorsport stuff and all the things we sponsor, events, like being there and having those experiences. It's like, We're living life experiences and learning life lessons through business.
Yeah.
Which like, I mean,
it's our education.
How do you define winning more than that? Like I'm living a life that I love and doing things that I'm excited to do. And I'm doing them as part of a growing business.
Yeah.
Like that to me is like, people have different ways of defining success. To me, getting to do that makes me as successful as I ever need.
Well, that's, we speak about that on the biggest podcast often is like, the portrait of success and how it changes, right? Yeah. We were talking, we're both, you know, we come from music and, you know, I'm sure you could share the same sentiments where for me at that point, unless you're performing in front of hundreds of thousands of people, there was no success that was ever achievable. No. Until we get to that.
Yeah. And then you're either nothing or you're a
rock
star. Yeah.
And exactly. Yeah. And then you start shifting and you start growing up and you start going through life and things happen in your life, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. And then your portrait of success continues to change.
It shifts a lot.
Yeah. Big time. And the ability as well to paint your portrait of success around what you're doing at a current state, whatever it is, even if it's way less, if you could paint that portrait of success around
there,
you.
Yeah. If it's there for you, like what's to say you haven't hit it? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's such a, like, I almost don't like the term. Like, I understand it defines something, but like the word success has been too long attached to like
financial
success, yeah, or fame,
monetary and materialistic. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't care how much money we're making or how many people know who I am.
Yeah.
If what I do every day makes me happy and I feel like I'm getting everything I want out of my life,
yeah,
what is more successful?
No, for sure.
For some people, you might have to be a $1 billion brand to feel that way.
Yeah.
So then you do have that sort of superficial success that people think of, money and fame, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. But if you feel that that's where you are and you're 100 steps behind that, it doesn't mean you aren't in the same place as the guy who's the $1 billion brand.
For sure.
Success is what you want it to be. And I mean, I feel like we both have that. Like,
yeah.
We love what we're doing. You've followed, you've taken a very similar course from origin to where you are, yeah, now as we have, so we can relate to the story. And then, yeah, you know, listening to you talk about the early days is, while it's couldn't be more different, hot sauce and clothing, but like, reminds me of the feelings of starting
the process and the mental process and the moves, and again the product is totally different, but the moves, yeah, that you have to be making,
yeah,
well, again, there's no playbook, but like, you know, even in us discussing, we're both, you're over 5 years now,
yeah,
as a company, yeah, but like, yeah, we're just over 5 years, mm-hmm, and again, the moves are similar in parallel,
totally.
So we were also talking about your first experience with One Bone, yeah, and you know, a buddy of yours, James, right? Yep. Shout out to James, yeah, my boy. he tried the stuff. He's way bigger than you. He's like, try it on, put it on. You, yeah, could tell by the fabric you liked it, but it was just a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And then you jump into the same feeling that every one of our customers, fam, is experiencing before they make an order. No fucking way is it actually going to do the thing, yeah, that I wanted
what
to
you
do.
Think it's, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say I was a skeptic, because like, I was already convinced by association,
yeah,
somebody that I know and love and trust is telling me how great this is for them. And I can see that, you know, if it were to fit me, I'd probably feel the same way, but it wasn't that thing where I'm like, oh, I'm going to run out and just buy all this stuff.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, yeah, that's legit. But like, I hadn't yet experienced it. And then, but yeah, as soon as you do, you know, when you find that first shirt that just like fits you the way you want it to fit you and it feels the way you want it to feel, it's that you almost go, it becomes almost like a hoarder mentality. You're like, I need all of this because it
if
works.
It goes
like,
away.
Exactly. How many times, yeah, have you found a brand? Like for me, it was jeans for the longest time.
Yeah.
I'd find a pair of jeans that fit me well and that I liked, and I'd buy a couple and then they'd get harder to find.
Of
and
course.
Then one day they're gone and I'm like, damn it, like I don't have the pants anymore, you know?
100%.
So it's like, I need to get it while I can.
We're producing it. I always feel that way about specific shirts that I'll bring, right, home. I'm like,
yeah,
this one's this like really
one. I better get a second,
yeah,
one.
Yeah, exactly.
Then I have like triplets of certain shirts,
yeah,
that I haven't even opened,
yeah,
because
of
like
course,
when I eventually maybe wear one out, which I've yet to do, by the way, in any of them, I'll have a backup.
Yeah.
So if it does go away, it's, which some of your best stuff does go away because,
yeah,
people snap it up and then it's gone, you know? So it's that feeling of like, no, I need to have this. It's
and I want to talk about your then encounter with us at first, because,
yeah,
again, this is like another pain point or fear that people have, right? Is like, so you had a shipping issue.
Yeah. So I placed, I placed an order. I believe I had been given a shirt that fit me before I actually purchased one myself,
okay,
because I knew,
so you
I
knew
my size,
yeah,
I knew that I liked it, and I had a business trip coming up and I wanted some proper fresh clothes,
yeah,
to wear while I'm traveling. So I placed an order. I ordered a bunch of shirts or a few shirts, whatever it was. And I needed it in like 3 or 4 days.
Right.
So I was like, okay, the express shipping says it'll get here in time. So I did that. And then the day I'm leaving, I'm tracking the order and it's still not here. And I'm like, and you know, what was frustrating is that like, I knew how good I would feel,
right,
if I had those clothes for my trip.
Yeah.
And it's that I wasn't going to have that. I didn't really care that the shipping didn't get
there
in time. It's that like, I'm not going to have that feeling that I was hoping to have,
yeah,
you know? So then, yeah, I sent just being in business and appreciating getting feedback when sometimes it's a topic that you're not aware, like if it's a shipping issue, you know? So yeah, I sent the email and just said, hey, like big fan of the brand, you know, supporter, love what you're doing. Just wanted to let you know I'd ordered express shipping, you know, paid a fair bit of money for it. And then I didn't get it in time. And I was unfortunately waiting for it for kind of a special event that I wanted to have it for. So just wanted to throw it out there just so you're aware. And like truly wasn't expecting or wanting anything. It was more just giving that critical feedback and wanting to know, like, did you guys drop the ball or did the shipping company drop the ball?
Because yeah.
we've experienced plenty of that and it sucks. So it's good to know.
Generally,
when the brand or
fortunately
the logistics,
and
you know?
Unfortunately, it's the latter. You know,
like exactly. So and then like I feel like I got an almost immediate reply, and it was like, you know, apologies, but then more than wasting time explaining or making excuses or blah blah blah. It was just like, we got to make this right. Shipping was refunded. I'm pretty sure a portion of my order was discounted. And then I believe I also got like a promo code. Like, like you guys handled it, you know?
Listen,
I think I voiced my opinion and whether it was that it was coming from another business person or what, like it was taken very seriously. And I felt like I got looked after, and that matters more than how you handle. And this is what we've tried to apply to our customer service is like how you handle a mistake or something that doesn't go the customer's way is what defines you more than what the thing itself was.
For sure.
That doesn't matter in the end. It's how you rectify it to the person. And those are the most loyal customers you make.
Exactly.
And here we are sitting here doing a podcast.
Yeah, literally,
right?
You know? So, like, but kudos, exactly.
Kudos to the customer service.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And, but literally that's our concept is best friend customer service because we fucking hated shopping online also.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And it sucks.
Especially for clothes.
Yeah, so.
If it doesn't fit, like, ah.
That, and that's why it was like the paramount for us was to make sure that if somebody is ordering something with us, they feel like they're ordering it from a friend. Because if you're ordering something from your friend, you could be damn sure your friend is going to make sure to take care of you at some point.
Of course, if
things don't go well, they're going to hook it up or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we strive for. And what's cool is that we've scaled our business with that in mind, you know? So
yeah, and that's not easy to do.
No.
I mean, maintaining high quality customer service at scale becomes very time consuming.
Yeah.
It can be very expensive. Like, you know, if we have a product damaged, like in the winter, you know, when it gets really, really cold, sometimes stuff sits on a truck for a couple of days, the bottles can get a little bit brittle, they can crack,
yeah.
you know, tops can break off. So somebody will order, you know, a pack of six sauces, one of them will break, we'll send them a whole new system.
Yeah, yeah, of
And
course.
It's like, you do
Surprise
that.
Surprise and delay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, under promise, over deliver.
Yeah.
Or just don't promise anything
yeah.
and then over deliver.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And then those people are so stoked.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, there's a cost to doing that, but it's worth every penny.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
Because you're maintaining the people's opinion of how you handle your business and they become loyal customers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to wrap it up. You flew into Montreal. You lost your baggage. You got the exact same suitcase, but an old lady's version.
Literally.
Yeah. And they have your suitcase. They have in there is your laptop and your clothes and your expensive sunglasses.
Really expensive pair of glasses.
Yeah. And your first thought is?
So I stayed at my sister-in-law's place in Toronto last night. And I get home. I go to open my bag to grab my toiletries. And I open the bag and it took me a second. I was like, what's this red? There was like a red Metro bag in there. I was like, I didn't pack that. I was like, what's going on? Did someone put this in my bag at the airport?
Yeah.
And then it hits me. I'm like, oh shit, this is not my suitcase.
Yeah.
And immediately I did like a quick inventory. I was like, my laptop's in there. My Hugo Boss sunglasses are in there. Only nice pair of glasses I ever bought myself.
Yeah.
You know, I had this, that, everything else. And I'm like, and I brought all my best One Bone stuff with me for this trip. Cause I'm traveling for 9 days.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need a lot of clothes and that's basically all I'm wearing. So I was like, my tie-dyes are in there. All my good Michaels are in there. I was like, literally. So I'm like immediately overlooking my MacBook Pro and my expensive glasses and like all this other stuff. And I'm like, all my good One Bone stuff is in there. And I was legitimately really upset thinking that I might lose all of those clothes. Like some of them I can get again. Some of them I can't.
Exactly.
You know, maybe I can.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was my immediate concern.
Yeah.
And I was like, Yeah, there's this other stuff too, I guess. But the clothes are what truly upset me the most.
That's crazy.
And now, like we said earlier too, I am rocking this 2-day tee.
Yeah.
And I feel fresh.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful. The top half of me feels fresh. I did shower, I'm rocking 2-day clothes today. I'm going to be honest.
Did you flip them?
Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah. You got it. That's the rule.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, that's another testament that I can now give this shirt is like 2 days of flying and traveling.
Flying just beats the shit out of you. Yeah.
It does, man. Yeah. You mangle, like somehow flying for 2 hours, you feel the same way as if you've been road tripping in a car for like 12 hours.
100%.
I don't understand why. I don't know if it's the old air in the plane.
I think it's also just the hurry up and wait aspect of traveling.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting and like it takes 45 minutes to an hour to like taxi and get out of there. And it just beats you up.
You're sitting on these vinyl chairs. Yeah. You get sweaty.
But at least your ass crack isn't touching the back of the seat now.
That's right. Absolutely true. Yeah. It's travel essentials now for sure.
Yeah, of course. Hey, listen, this has been exceptional. Again, this is Al, Heartbeat Hot Sauce. You can check them out, heartbeathotsauce.com.
Yes, sir.
And as well, you could grab our Heartbeat Hot Sauce, the biggest sauce, on onebone.com. Al's rocking a 2-day-old Army Green Michael, a.k.a. the Bullet Tee. It looks just as fresh as he probably put it on.
It does. It feels just as good.
Yeah. I'm rocking the new Stargazer Blue. If it's still available, go cop that on onebone.com. And man, this has been an amazing pleasure. Thank you for rocking with us on the biggest podcast. Thank you for chilling with us. You know all the things. Subscribe, like, whatever. Do your thing. We appreciate you. Peace.